The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson.
All right, good morning, State of Jefferson. This is just like old times. I'm your guest host today, Chris Kellstrom. I'm in the studio with Patrick Jones and his beautiful wife, Lori Jones. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, good morning, and it looks like Wynn just showed up as well.
He's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I think that's your line, Wynn, so I'll go ahead and use it since these are your headphones here. But
nope, these are.
Okay. Anyways, welcome to State of Jefferson Show. Wynn asked us to come in today, so we came in, and then Wynn ended up being late, but that's all right. He's here now.
Yeah, car trouble. Once again.
All right, we're going to start a GoFundMe for you.
Gosh, it's crazy. It isn't one thing, it's another. Well, thank you guys for coming in. I appreciate it. Quick question. We're going to talk about, obviously, the Board of Supervisors, right? I mean, that's your big commonality,
might,
right?
Might as well. What
might as well. What
There's nothing else we can talk about.
Do you have any other topics?
Well, I went to a nice party last night.
Yeah, no, we don't want to know about that.
Well, and, you know, it's a great opportunity for the public. You know, this is Supervisor Kellstrom's second year, and kind of give some perspective on that. He's vice chair right now. I expect you'll be moving into chair next year, and maybe we'll have some ideas of keeping things the same or doing something different. You know, every time we have a new chair, the agenda can change a little bit. Priorities are often directed from the chair. So he's watched me be chair last year in 2023, and he's watching Chair Cry now. So he'll be ready to be chair for 2025.
There you go.
Thank goodness the recall effort failed, because I'm not ready to be chair. I did not want to be chair. So.
At that moment?
Yeah, exactly. And Kevin has been, I think he's been doing fantastic since the recall's over. So he's got a new little spring in his step. So it's been great.
Well, I like the fact that you guys are being a little bit more aggressive about getting things done. And I expect the same to continue until the end of the year, even into January. Be aggressive, get stuff done, because if you don't, all for nothing, right?
And I tell you, I'll give a shout out to resource management, because, that's my wheelhouse. I'm down there constantly. In fact, I saw Adam Fiesler on Friday at an inspection, and I told him, I said, hey, I gave you a break. You know, I emailed Leo and Paul instead of you. I left you out of this one. He goes, oh no, they sent it to me. I'm in the middle of it. I said, okay, but I'm really happy with the way they've worked to try to, you know, make that a better process, getting them a permit, getting projects done, getting projects through, finding the loopholes instead of just shutting everybody down with all the horror stories we had heard in the years past. So shout out to them. I really appreciate the job they've been doing.
Yeah, and resource management over the years, going back to Russ Moll, Rick Simon, we had some serious issues that really cost people of our county considerable time and frustration, and quite a few of them ended up leaving over it. When you can't work in a county that you have been raised in and grown up in, super frustrating. And at that time, the board, we always oversee these departments, but when you leave an apartment completely unchecked, those are the things that sometimes that you see. This board has been more aggressive in a lot of different areas. For example, people know that we've had four attorneys, probably that's almost half of the attorneys that we have left recently, and there's reason for that. These attorneys, unfortunately, were withholding information from the board, a serious mistake to do, because we are the client and we have to represent the people, and so we do that by having good legal advice. And so that has been changing. We have a new county council now, and he'll be hiring new council, new attorneys shortly, and so that's getting overhauled as well, and that's a big thing. When you have good legal advice, it's very helpful. When you have legal advice that's been withheld from you, serious problem. So we're moving in the right direction there, and there's a lot of other things that this majority and this majority started in January of 2023 when Supervisor Kelstrom and Supervisor Cry came on board to add with me. We finally, for the first time probably in decades, had a really solid conservative majority, and then we didn't waste those opportunities. Mm-hmm. We quickly started moving on issues that were important to us.
Well, one of the big deals, from my understanding, is that the legal counsel that represents the board in the county, not separate from the DA office, but that legal counsel, they withheld the fact that the county was in a court case, and the Board of Supervisors had no knowledge. Is that correct?
That is the truth. And how much more of that existed, I'm unsure. I've asked our current counsel now, Joe Lamar, to let's go back and look at some investigations for the last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
Because those were withheld from the board as well. All of the internal investigations. So if we back up last year, our new CEO, Dave Rickert, came on board. He'd been with us for approximately about a month, and I caught him in the hallway, and he said, hey, that DA investigation is wrapping up. And I go, what DA investigation? He goes, well, Director of Support Services, Monica Fugit, said it's wrapping up. And I said, okay, well, I have not heard about that, so I'll go ask Monica. So I talked to Director Fugit, and she says, yes, it's wrapping up. And I said, well, I haven't seen it. Is there a report? She said, yes. And I said, okay, well, I need to go read that.
And you were chair at the time.
And I was chair. And I said, you know, come to think of it, this is the first internal investigation that I've heard about ever. And she goes, well, yeah, because we don't tell you about them. And I go, excuse me.
We don't tell you. We choose not to tell you about them.
Yeah, I said, you don't do that. And I said, okay, well, that is definitely going to change. And so the new policy now is that comes, all the investigations are going to come forward. And obviously there's been investigations that have gone on that we were totally unaware of, mm-hmm. from start to finish. And so we have to supervise everything. And so when we have these investigations and that were withheld from us, we can't see any. If there were any bad trends,
right?
If you started seeing something in a particular department that was constant,
right?
It should have been dealt with by the board, but wasn't because we never saw it.
Isn't there funding that would need to be put in place for that to happen as well?
Exactly.
That would have to be authorized by the board.
Well, absolutely, and all that. There were that, and so again, when you see that four of our attorneys left, there's probably really good reason why they did. Once this board came on. You know, these are pretty serious issues, you know, and they could be brought up before the Bar Association.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It could be disbarred, couldn't they?
And I believe so. And that's the seriousness of what some of these attorneys were doing within Shasta County. And that's getting cleaned up. And that's going to be, like I say, a very big deal to have proper legal representation. And this board, you know, things are going to be a little different for the remainder of the year and probably moving forward with more transparency,
mm-hmm.
and releasing things to the public. For example, if you back up to 2022, if I'm not mistaken, or 2021, I think it was in 2022, they enacted some fees for Freedom of Information Act, and I didn't support that, but it put a very high cost so that people would, you know, would price them out of getting information from the county.
Right.
This board got rid of that fee.
And you got to remember, during that time, that was when we had the, you know, the COVID and the boardroom was shut down, and Leonard, mm-hmm. Modi was in charge, and so it was, you know, the patriot groups that were trying to get information and trying to get stuff. So they just raised the prices up high enough to make, you know, discourage them from doing that, which is basically illegal. I mean, it's unconstitutional, you know. So they wanted to discourage them from getting public records. So,
well, it's our information.
100%.
And the thing is, too, okay, like Patrick, you've been in the business, you know, business, government entity for a long time, being in an elected position. Chris, you're newer to it. So was it or is it what you thought it was going to be?
You know, it's, yeah, there's parts of it that are worse than I thought it would be. Yeah, obviously, you go to the board meetings, so you know what I'm talking about.
Chris constantly says, what did you get me into?
Quite often, yes. But, you know, it's just, I mean, you know, I totally support the Constitution, totally believe in the Constitution, took an oath to uphold the Constitution. So First Amendment rights, the right to redress your grievances, and the right to freedom of speech, I totally maintain, but it's like enough already. It adds 6 hours to our meetings, 5 to 6 hours to our meeting, you know, and it's like, heard you. We heard you the first 20 times. The same 12, 15 people. It's like, it's just.
And they say the same thing on every single issue when they come up before the board.
Right.
Well, or they just want to attack the board members instead of actually, it's so nice and refreshing when someone goes up there and actually talks about
issues.
County business. Yep. And, right. And what's relevant to the county. It's like, oh my God, that was refreshing because that's the way it's supposed to be. I've sat through these two and,
yep.
And they just want to get up and bully and badger and accuse instead of just, hey, what solutions? How can we move
right.
forward? This
right.
is what's happening and, you know.
And a lot of these are personal attacks.
Oh, yeah.
And when, you know, people are sitting there doing all these personal attacks, it's like, you know what? This is not the time nor the place for that, but they're inflicting that on all of us.
Right.
The people that are listening online, the people listen to it afterwards, you know, the recorded version, the people sitting in the room.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. It's immature. They need to grow
very
up.
Immature.
And if they're going to have issues to bring before the board, by all means, I agree with you guys. You know, yes, go ahead and bring up the issue, whatever it might be. But if you're just going to be doing personal attacks just to be
heard.
Awful, and just to be heard and make a name for yourself, that's
well,
wrong.
And you know, and they attack, and it's okay when they're, you know, if it was a real issue, right? If you had really done mm-hmm. something inappropriate, but
right.
Just on my case, for example, stating that I had a conflict of interest and voting on the reduction of impact fees or the termination of impact fees were, you know, would be illegal for me because I may have a future project that I may benefit from.
Any
that.
One of us could have a future project,
but all of us have future projects, most likely, and can. And our attorney at the time did discuss that and let the public know that it would not be inappropriate for me. In fact, it would be appropriate for me to vote on it because it affects the entire county. It's
right.
not specific. Now, if we had a determination of an impact fee just for a shooting range, that would be very narrow and obviously
right.
a conflict. But
right.
So we explained that very well, but still people had the gall. And I know it was a couple of the local attorneys that are constantly at the boardroom. So they send letters over to the grand jury. So the grand jury takes some time to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And they find no wrongdoing, of course. And you know, in most of these, I would say in all of the decisions that we make when we have some serious issues, we do go to counsel and make sure
right.
that we're doing things appropriately. And or we call the FPPC if we need to get clarification on a particular issue. But yet they still complain. Time and time again.
Right.
And so that part is frustrating. But a lot of good work is happening behind the scenes this year. You know, and I was proud of the work we did last year. You know, it's not always the case that you get to be chair of the board. And there are people that go the entire cycle and aren't chair. And so, you know, I was happy with the work we did. I was very happy to terminate, you know, right off the bat in January, I brought forward to terminate the electronic voting system that we had.
Right.
And unfortunately, the state comes around and passes a law and says you will use one of the three proprietary software systems that are available to us. And, you know, and so that is just round one. I don't think that battle is over yet. Obviously, the state is, you know, tyrannical and it's over. Reach with local government, and those are the battles that we're going to continue to have. We're fighting the California Energy Commission right now. That is costing the taxpayers a lot of money to push back, but what they did was try to take our local authority away from us. We made a good decision, the Energy Commission now, and the state says they have the power to overturn that. To date, we have spent $500,000 to try to defend our actions. We are correct. They are wrong. They have no authority here, and those are things we're going to be doing in the future.
Right. Okay. Hey, we've got a caller on the line. Dick, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. So, you know, there's a local website. It's called Bonneview Neighborhood, and I've been reading people writing, comment about this 1 cent sales tax that's being proposed. And evidently, they need $150 million to convert an old courthouse into a jail.
Well,
you know, wait a minute. It wasn't that long ago that part of our existing jail was closed because we didn't have people to run it. Now, say we spend $150 million and convert this jail. Where is the money going to come to run the damn thing?
Good question, Dick. And so you've got some of the facts correct there and then some incorrect facts there. So the The issue with staffing the old jail was literally about 10 people, 10 moving some sheriff deputies over to fill while recruitment had time to catch up. The sheriff now has done that, and so our existing current jail is at, you know, capacity, and we have all the beds basically being taken up. What is being proposed is the cost to build an additional jail, not remodel the old courthouse. Part of that courthouse or all of the courthouse would be torn down, and a new state-of-the-art facility would be built. When we first started to discuss this with myself and Chair Baugh at the time, we were working with a consultant, a DLR, and they had just finished a few years before a 300-bed facility in Fresno for $43 million. And I said, I like the sound of that. And and that is something that we could afford. Since then, unfortunately, due to a variety of different issues, the price has been escalating out of control from $40 million to $50 to $60 to $100 to $125, and now we're being told $150 million to construct the new jail. If the public supported a dedicated tax, and it would be totally up to the voters, it would fund the new jail and staffing for that jail, and there would be enough to do it. Now, I'm not going to speak for the other supervisors, but I'm pretty sure that Chair Cry, Supervisor Kelstrom, and myself highly dislike taxing the public more. We feel you're already taxed too much. But because of these price escalations that are out of our control, if that's going to be built in that manner, the public would have to support a sales tax increase, and that's something I do not like. I probably will not vote yes for it myself personally, but it's up to the voters if they want to do it.
So you would vote to put it out to the public so they can vote on it?
Absolutely. They will put it to the vote of the people. It's up to them. If it's a serious enough issue, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very difficult to really, for myself, get on the bandwagon and say, hey, we're going to take some more money from you. Because ultimately what it's doing is it's growing government. We're taking more money from the private sector, and you know, and I would really like to look within our own budget. They say it's not possible, and I think everything is possible. It's a matter of what are your priorities,
right?
And you know, and it is unfortunate that the costs have just ballooned
200%.
Exactly. Hey, Dick, is there anything else on there? Or are you still here?
Well, I don't know about any other voters, but on any ballot, when I see an increase in taxes or bonds, I will always vote no. No matter how much money they have, government has, they want more and more and more. Like our federal government now is spending like crazy, way in debt, and they keep spending, raise taxes. I'm against any tax increase, and I will vote no on it myself.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you, Dick. It's, you know, what we're asking you to do is to trust the government, and that is a really hard thing to do. And here's the other thing, too. Even though this could be a dedicated tax, and it would be, and it would be for the construction of a new jail, staffing for the new jail, we already have another budget, you know, that's currently operating the old jail right at the moment. And what I've seen in the past is where there was a dedicated tax, the other monies below it can be manipulated and maneuvered around.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that before. And so the public has a right to not trust government. Government is only as good as the people that we elect. And as you can see, the boards change.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have most likely three different board members come January that could substantially change the board, its direction, and their priorities.
Well, just for example, with the city, there was a TOT tax to maintain the Civic Center, dedicated just to maintaining that. And over the course of years, somehow that got misplaced or moved, and so...
Well, no, it was deliberately. There was a TOT tax for the Civic Auditorium back when it was first created, and the city just simply has moved it over into the general fund, and so once again there was a dedicated tax for something, and they didn't do what they were
as
supposed
years
to
went
do.
By. Right.
So again, trust.
One more thing. Happy Memorial Day tomorrow.
Oh, you too. Thank you for your service, Dick. We love you.
Okay. Thanks for letting me on. Okay. Bye.
Yeah, I think the most famous case, or the one that stands out on that, on the moving the taxes around, was the lottery. Back in the 80s, the lottery, and it was sold to the public.
Like, yep.
All the money from the lottery is going to go right to the schools, and everybody's like, oh, this is going to be fantastic. Well, all the money from the lottery did go to the schools, but the money that was already going to the schools was taken out and put into the general fund, so then it was just basically a wash. There was no extra money for schools. There was extra money for the general fund.
So it was a money laundering effect.
Absolutely.
Well, and even our building at 1450 Court Street was paid for with tobacco fund money, and that had nothing to do. You know, it was supposed, that money was dedicated for reducing people, you know, trying to reduce that addiction of smoking and whatnot, and it went for, that's the only way they afforded that new building.
Wow.
And so there, you don't have to look back very far to see mistrust with governments. And so while we do need a new jail, the cost escalation may make it unaffordable. It'll be up to the public if they want to support the tax or not. But we'll also be taking a look, and so another kind of partial question for Mr. Wilkinson is that the current courthouse, we have a new courthouse, mm-hmm. and the old courthouse across the street is soon to be property of Shasta County.
Because it's currently state, right?
It is.
Correct. Okay.
And it will be ours shortly, and there are some possibilities of saving a part of it. And I have suggested that we do a post-release program that could be very beneficial to inmates and help reduce some of the time that they're spending in the Shasta County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some opportunities there, and we're going to own that building here shortly. So I look forward to that as well. And one of the things that we had discussed at the at-home meetings was what are you doing for post-release? And right now, when we release somebody from Shasta County Jail, we open up the front door, out they go. And obviously, you know, a vast majority of them are going to be reoffending, you know, fairly quickly.
And they're not even introduced to the services that exist, right?
Right. They have minimal contact. Okay. And there is contact, but we want a lot more, and mm-hmm. we need more supervision there, that type of person.
And accountability.
And hold them accountable. And reward them if they do the program.
Mm-hmm.
And help them, get them back on their feet, and help them from not reoffending. It'll free up some space in our jail.
Mm-hmm.
It'll utilize a building that has been paid for by taxpayers instead of just tearing it all down.
Right.
Being able to utilize it. And then we can still discuss. I'm not in a hurry. I am in a hurry, but I'm not in a hurry to make the wrong decision about building a jail. It's been talked about. The tax was floated in the past. The problem with the past tax was that it was for a whole bunch of things, not just for a jail, but a DA and a whole bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a dedicated tax. So
it was porked. And that's exactly what it was. It was porked up.
I mean, the public was never going to buy that because it'll go into the general fund. They're supposed to use it for this, but again, they don't have to. They're not mandated to. And that failed miserably. And so a dedicated tax is really the only way that I think the public would have a chance to support it. But I'm with Dick Wilkinson on this one. You know, if we weren't taxed to death already, it would be an easy sale.
Right.
But this is not going to be an easy sale because of how much you're spending right now in tax money and what you're getting for it.
Right, right.
I believe Aaron Bertain said that we had, 35 or 37 million set aside. So ironically, you know, when the jail cost $43 million down in Fresno, we were almost there. I mean, you probably could have started construction, you know, but now because of whatever inflation and they printing money that has nothing behind it and everything else, now the price has gone up so much that the $35 million is a drop in the bucket now.
Exactly. No. Hey, we've got a caller on. Steve, how are you doing?
Good morning. Yeah, I keep coming back to the forensic audit. I'm just wondering how that's coming in your county because I watch you guys very closely and try to bring what you're doing up here to whoever I can get to listen to me, and it's not the supervisor so much.
Yeah, Steve, so we are...
The forensic tax, is there something in there that where you wouldn't have to raise the tax because the forensic audit would reveal so much pork all over the place, but that's just a question. Thank you.
Yeah, Steve, I mean, we're not opposed to that. And what's going to come up here fairly shortly is we're going to be doing our budget hearings, and they're going to be ongoing for several days, if not more. We're going to have a more in-depth look department by department. I want to take a look at what they were spending 2 years ago, what they got last year, what they're proposing for this year. I think there's going to be millions of dollars that can be saved there as well. And more investigations are going to be going on because the lack of them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, this is a very different board. There's no mistake about this board. It's a conservative board. We live in a conservative county, and local government should reflect the citizens. That is what's happening today. Obviously, our liberal friends are upset because they've had their way for decades.
Right.
What I'm asking is give us a little time. Let us show you what we can do.
Okay. Perfect time to stop. We're going to go to our first break, our only break. Time has come for 51.
Let's get her done.
Hey, CA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? It's not our bill, we had no say. You don't serve us, you serve LA. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Sounds like a door slammer right there, right? All right, we're back. And so we've got Chris Kellstrom and Patrick Jones, Board of Supervisors here, talking about all kinds of good stuff with the board. One of the big things is what kind of staffing and bureaucratic changes have you made or personnel changes have you made while sitting on the board? I mean, we see that there are different things going on and different people in play.
Well, first, I am Supervisor Patrick Jones, District 4, and of course I'm here with Supervisor Chris Kelstrom, District 5. Everybody knows District 4 is far better than District 5. Hill Country is always better than Flatland, so I just needed to get that out there. And
from a guy that just lost his election. I'm
Jones here. Win some, lose some, what can I say? And it's no secret we've had changes within management, and most of these people, I think we've only had one firing, which was the health officer, Karen Ranstrom, and now we have a new health officer, Dr. Mu, who brings to the table 30 years of experience as a physician here in Shasta County. He's a great addition to the team. We have a new CEO, Dave Rickards, doing a great job, lots of experience and new eyes, and I think that's what I really like about bringing people in with new eyes. They see things that the others were not. Mm-hmm. And Health and Human Services Director Laura Birch is doing a very good job. Support Services Director Monica Fugit's doing a great job. So a lot of these positions, County Council, we have a new County Council and a whole new team coming in. These are things that, the boards come and go. And whether the board is a liberal board or a conservative board, staff carries out whatever the majority of the board does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that it is. What I saw when I was at City Hall, when we had a decision that was clearly a more conservative-minded from the more conservative council members, staff would slow walk it and make it go so slow that it probably died of a slow death, and it's really a form of insubordination, because it's whatever the will of the council is, it's to be carried out. Whatever the will of the board is, it's to be carried out at the same speed.
Whether you agree with it or disagree.
And that was not happening, and now it is. And so whatever boards come in the future, I'm pretty certain that the team we have in place today will carry that out at the same speed that anything else should be moving at.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's important, and because we do represent the people.
So I would say it hasn't been staff changes, but it's been philosophy changes. So that's probably what I'm most proud of. So, our resource management department, building department, years in past, we've all heard the nightmares, getting permits or code enforcement, coming after somebody with a Costco pool on their property or a storage container or whatever. But they have now changed the philosophy there that years ago you used to, if you were applying for a permit to, say, rebuild your garage, and they looked at your property and said, oh, this garden shed built 40 years ago is out of compliance. It doesn't have a building permit on it. Well, they wouldn't give you the permit to build your garage until you got that in compliance or whatever. So that philosophy has now changed, where if you apply for a permit and there's something else in your property that's out of compliance, they'll notify you of that. But if it doesn't directly affect the project you're getting a permit for, they give you the permit. And it's like, that seems like a pretty common sense, simple thing to do, but yet it's been 40 years since anybody's tried to, put some common sense in there.
Well, when I worked at the assessor's office, I was an appraiser, a rural appraiser, and you run across that as a rural appraiser constantly. You would find little sheds, less than 120 square feet, yet they wanted those permitted. It's like, wait, you can buy that at Costco. Why do you need to have a permit for something like that that can be transported out there and dropped on the ground?
Yeah.
And I ran across that a lot, because I would try to do the finals and get the records up to date. And those records, if they weren't up to date, it can affect the taxpayer's insurance. It can affect their mortgage. It can affect a lot of things that go on. They have to have that final sign-off, and that's way too much power for any agency to hold over a taxpayer.
Yeah, and it's like when I first got elected and I went and met with them, I explained to them, I said, listen, when somebody's doing a project in our county, we should be rolling out the red carpet.
Right.
They're going to be spending tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in the local economy with the painter and the cement guy and
right.
the concrete and the stucco guy and whatever, and the building materials. Then they're going to beautify their property, make it look nicer, which we all want to happen. Then they're going to increase the value of the property,
right.
which we increase the taxes on. So this is a win-win-win for everybody involved, and we're shutting down projects over a 40-year-old garden shed. I said, awnings. There's been a couple cases where awnings, well, those were supposed to be engineered. How do you engineer an awning? So shout out to them. They have turned that around. They try to find the loopholes. They try their hardest to get a project through. I just had constituents reach out to me, because, again, this is my wheelhouse. You know, I have a gentleman down Anderson area that's wanting to put in a project. Well, Caltrans, of course, not our jurisdiction, but Caltrans wanted to put a stoplight at Latona. And he's like, that's going to cost me $1 million. I can't afford it. You know, Caltrans needs a stoplight there, but they don't want to pay for it. So they want to put somebody else. And they wanted to do a traffic study on another project. Well, they just sent him a letter that said, never mind, we're going to defer to the county to whether you have to have a traffic study or not. And I'm sure the county won't require them to have a traffic study. I mean, it's, you know, it's a turnoff off 273. It's already an existing easement in there. So, you know, again, shout out to them. I had somebody reach out to me and, you know, it's just the bureaucratic rules. Her father has 5 acres up in Shingletown, has an 1800 square foot home on it. She wants to put a 1200 square foot modular on there so her and her husband can live, you know, on her father's property. Now it's one dwelling per 5 acres up there. You know, that's the recommendation. So basically when she went and pulled the permit, they said, no, there's a rule that you can only have a secondary dwelling can only be half the size of the primary dwelling that's already on there. So she could only have a 900 and some square foot, you know, home. Well, you know, and again, God bless them. I sent the email off the other day, and I mean, I run into Adam, who I left out of the email, and he's like, no, we're trying to find a loophole. We think we can, you know, do this. You can get an alternate dwelling instead of a second dwelling. So they're working on it. So it's, you know, they want this girl to be able to put a modular over there. They want the project to go through. So again, I'm most happy with that because they do bend over backwards to try to find a way to get a project through, you know, while staying within the rules, mm-hmm. you know. But there's so many rules out there, and it's so easy if you have the wrong philosophy to just shut something down.
I mean, it's amazing, too, because if they have one dwelling per 5 acres, why isn't that just countywide? Because I live in a subdivision. I live on about 3/4 of an acre. My neighbor to the west of me has a 1,500 square foot guest house. My neighbor to the right of me has a 1,300 square foot guest house. Very nicely done. They're top shelf quality. They match the homes. And I have a guest house in the back. It's not as large as those two, but we all have guest houses on our property. And, you know, their pools and everything else. So why?
Yeah, that's all part of the general plan, the specific plans. I mean, the state requires us and the federal government requires us to have a certain number of high-density housing, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. So they try to do the zoning and keep within those plans. So that's why sometimes you have a five-acre minimum lot in mm-hmm. size. But, again, she was told no. But then, you know, they're already working on a way to find her to be able to get her to be able to put a home out there. So.
And another position that's going to be filled here shortly, which is the ROV, the Register of Voters, the county clerk.
Right.
That's
right.
A huge position right there. So I'm excited about that. And most likely, again, it's going to be up to the majority of the board, but we're going to be picking somebody. I'm hoping, again, I really like the idea of new eyes. To help in transparency, and I have been reasonably vocal about our last Register of Voters not taking advantage of the opportunity to have very transparent elections. We all know that when you cast your ballot, that's a very private matter, but the counting of the ballot should be a very public matter.
Right.
Once it's taken out of that envelope, it's completely anonymous, and the public should be fully engaged. And as the years have passed, we have been pushed further and further back, which has created a lack of trust. And there are some easy ways to restore trust within the ROV office, and I'm going to be looking for that next ROV, the Register of Voters, to be very transparent. If they just simply do that, will really help the office.
Well, what about, you know, changing of equipment? You know, say the printers of the ballots and all that other kind of stuff. Why not do a full-on change of what's going on to get it correct, do a huge corrective action on this whole thing?
Well, and again, with the right ROV, I think you're going to see improvements in a lot of areas. You know, when you have 20 different issues, it's a little daunting to fix all 20, but you take issue after issue, you fix one problem, mm-hmm. you move on to the next one, you fix that, you keep working on the areas that need concern so that you have a fair election. We want to make sure that every vote is correct and counted correctly and that there aren't any illegal ballots. We know the voter rolls are dirty. We know that. I'm looking for an ROV that's going to take a huge effort.
Then why was it certified?
Well,
why was it certified? If we know the voter rolls are dirty, why would the ROV certify the election, and then they pass that certification on to you guys, asking you for basically just a quick stamp it, saying, yeah, it's certified, because you're trusting the ROV to do their job, so you're not in there dealing with it and double-checking everything. So they're forcing you to endorse what they did.
Right, I guess, you know, and you know, the supervisors do supervise the election department. Now, I didn't certify the results of this election. The majority of the board did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily blame them because it was most likely a moot point. The ROV sends it off to the Secretary of State, and they're going to certify it. And so it's really a perfunctory thing,
exactly.
Certifying it from the board's level.
But perception from the public.
But I'd seen enough. From observation, where I wasn't allowed to observe correctly, and it's an election violation. I've seen firsthand that the precincts and the batch numbers are not matching on the audit log, which is another election code violation. I've seen things where these are clearly violations within the law, and they could harm candidates. And, you know, every election cycle, people are going to win and they're going to lose.
Right.
That happens. I've lost more than I've won, by far. But I want the right. It should be fair. I don't want to be cheated. I want it to be fair.
Nobody minds losing if you lose fairly.
And I was upset in 2020, even though I won, but I knew my race was compromised. And I knew it. I knew it, in the fall. The primary, looked very good. And I felt solid about that. But in the fall November run, my opponent on the first drop, my opponent was within 0.4% close to me when I clearly had blown him out of the water. And I knew something was wrong. And sure enough, as we start taking a look at the vote cast record, there's this front loading that can't happen, and mathematically it's impossible. We're seeing a regular cycle now of ballots coming in on the first drop, which are the ballots that they're counting before the election, and they're all big drops for the more liberal candidates. And then when you see the other drops come in, the conservatives are winning those. And so you have a serious problem with that first drop that's not natural. And it's always for the same type of candidate, which is mathematically impossible. We've seen it for several election cycles now. And so clearly, that shouldn't be happening. And more Republicans vote early, now that we know that. Statistically, we have a lot of people voting before Election Day, and the majority of them are Republicans. But it's not matching that first drop, not at all. In fact, it's the opposite. And this has been going on quite some time now. I think this election coming in November, you're going to see some very different outcomes. I think you're going to see mathematical formulas that are in line with how a race should start and finish. And so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about being able to pick an ROV. I want to do it all out in the open,
mm-hmm.
Go through the interview process out in the open for people that are serious contenders. I think if you put your name in the hat and you're just doing it simply out of spite, we probably won't spend much time with you. But if you're serious about wanting to be our next ROV, the application process is open and ongoing right now for the next week and a half or so.
Okay, so that's a great point. So you're looking at hiring somebody, appointing somebody into that position. It's an elected position. What's the balance of the term?
So you'll take on the remainder of Kathy Allen.
Two more years.
Two more years, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be an election, and that person can either run again or not.
Okay. Okay, so then having a new ROV, whoever that might be, and you're going to go through the organic phase of interviewing them live in the boardroom in front of the public, right?
Well, unless that changes, I mean, the board did vote already to do it that way. There may be some discussion of you know, trying to weed the big group down to a smaller selection and then doing that out in the public. I think on this one, because it's such a high profile position, that I would just assume do it all out in the open. And I mean, if it takes 2 or 3 days,
it's no different than running a race. I mean, if you're going to be running a race, you go to a town hall, you go to a debate, you do a forum, you get up there, you say your thing, and you're asked questions by the moderator. It's just being reversed now by the board going to be asking him. The board will essentially be the moderator, and each individual will get to go up there and answer the questions.
I learned from we didn't have much of an opportunity when I was on council to be able to replace our city manager. That never came up, and so but it did here when I was with the board. And what I witnessed with the CEO selection is we had roughly 40 people put in for Shasta County executive officer, and what I saw in that was that we had some different subcommittees. We had department heads making their recommendation. The board would make their recommendation. Then we had a citizens committee that would make their recommendations. And I knew my gut would say, I knew that how a department head would pick a CEO would be very different than how the board would, and probably the citizens committee as well. And what was very interesting with that is the people that we put as the best and the people that we put as the worst, department heads had reversed that, completely reversed what we thought we would like to see as compared to what they would.
And some of them didn't even make the cut.
Yeah.
We had to ask, well, what happened to this person? What happened to that person? Oh, well, they didn't make the cut. So.
And so I don't want to leave.
Interesting.
I don't want to take my authority and give that to some committee
right.
to do it, because I think they're going to be looking at things differently. We were elected. And this is an important position. I want to take a look at everybody that's obviously serious about doing this job. And, you know, we'll be able to see very quickly who's going to be open and transparent, who's ready to dig in, who's got the education. And it doesn't mean that you have to have been an ROV in some county somewhere.
Right.
You just got to be motivated, and you have to care a lot about having fair and transparent elections.
But if we end up getting 20 applicants, then, you know, I do think that we'll probably need to weed those down.
Sure.
You know, because, again, if we were to have 20 people out there and doing interviews, you know, an hour apiece, I mean, and especially with public comment the way it is, it would take 2 weeks.
Why do you have to have public comment?
Yeah, I don't think we have to have public comment. So
that's just going to muddy the waters, and it's going to make everybody irritated. We do not. I'm sorry, but that's not the time or place for public comment.
I think by law, I don't think by law we have to have public comment. But
you're interviewing the people. You're not You're not talking to the.
I actually do believe we probably will have 20 people. I just think the board. For those that appear to be more serious, those folks will be asked more questions. Other people that clearly shouldn't be there most likely are not going to be asked very many questions, so it'll move through very rapidly. I still think we could get this done in a day or two, and I'm okay with that because it is such an important position, and I just don't want to release my authority and weed out somebody that I would have liked to have interviewed.
Right.
Because the way some staffers would look at things can be very different. Very different than how we look at things here in Shasta County.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's a great opportunity. It's an exciting time. We have our budget hearings coming up. We have this ROV selection coming up. So a lot going on. And this whole year will be, you know, a busy year. You know, and when you're chair, the first couple months, most of the time you've got your pressing issues, you know, things that you want to see change or happen or new direction. And so for the first couple months you see that. And then usually there's a little slowdown period, not this year. And, we've just got a lot of stuff. For me, there's obviously a sense of urgency, because I have the remainder of the year. So every day is important and every meeting is important. We're having more meetings this year than we've ever had. We have more night meetings. We have more public comment. It's been very beneficial to have more meetings because the agendas are in a reasonable amount of paperwork to read, two to 300 pages, as opposed to the 600 or 700 pages, which says you need more meetings.
Right.
And it's not good for the public because they're going to not read that information, and it's not good for the board because we're going to be speed reading and missing things.
Details that are huge.
So I think this next week. We're not having a meeting next week. This is probably the first one that we haven't had in months.
Yeah, and then we don't have another we don't have another off week until September.
Yeah, so okay. Every week you'll be seeing meetings and opportunities.
How many evening meetings are you guys going to be having?
And I think he had a total of 7, and I think we've done 2 now or 3, I can't recall. So more will be coming. If you go to the Shasta County's website, you'll see our calendar, mm-hmm. and you'll see our meeting schedules, and there'll be an asterisk for those that are night. And plus, keep in mind, there's probably going to be 3 or 4 additional meetings and not on there that are special meetings, because we do call special meetings from time to time. And so...
And what would those be used for, those special meetings?
If something is pressing, we'll have, you know, that's time sensitive. Mm-hmm. So that can happen. If there is a matter that happens to pop up, and say, like, for example, if an issue popped up right now today, we don't have a meeting next week. It wouldn't have been on the agenda, so we'd probably call for a special meeting.
Gotcha.
And, you know, we don't make it a habit because the public is unaware of that date, and it might not be on a Tuesday, right? It might be on a Thursday or a Wednesday.
Right.
And so the public doesn't have a lot of time, but if it's time sensitive, we have to do our business out in the open, and we will.
Absolutely.
I'm having mixed emotions on the night meetings, because originally when I was campaigning, I really wanted to move all meetings to night meetings because mm-hmm. I wanted it, you know, more accessible to the public. But now that we have these night meetings, I mean, I look out in the crowd and I see staff out there until, you know, 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night.
Our last one went to midnight.
I know. Yeah. And it's so I really have mixed emotions on that. You know, I might even do some sort of a hybrid where we could start at 2 in the afternoon, say 2 or 3 in the afternoon, get the mundane county stuff out of the way. You know, I mean, or not mundane, but the routine
the
county staff
stuff out
of the way. Yeah, so where the staff can be there during their work schedule. You know, when we give the employee of the month, for instance, I mean, they might have 20 people from that department there.
Sure.
Well, I don't want to make 20 people from a department, you know, come in and be there until 7 o'clock at night, you know, 2 hours after their shift is over so that they can see their coworker get the employee of the month. So
right.
I'm having mixed emotions about that. I don't know. We'll take a look at it, you know, whenever it's my turn to be chair, and I'm in no hurry to be chair, I'll tell you that right now. But, you know, might look into some sort of a hybrid where we can start the meeting in the afternoon, get the county business out of the way, where the majority of apartment heads can get their stuff taken care of, and then we'll get to the meat of the issues, you know, where it's more important for public comment, more important for people to weigh in, without as much county staff having to stay over. So I don't know.
What I always envisioned on a night meeting was for a high-profile topic. You know, so you had like one big issue
right.
where people, you know, didn't have to miss work. When I was with the city of Reading, and I went to 12 years worth of meetings, and they were always at night, and I kind of got used to that. And so when I came to the county, I didn't like these morning meetings. I wasn't used to it. And then you get used to it.
Yeah.
And then night meetings are weird because you're not used to it.
Right.
And last week's meeting was a night meeting, and it did go to midnight. And the whole next day, you're just kind of running on fumes because lack of sleep.
Well, it's amazing too. You know, all the big vocal folks that want to pound the drums and do all that stuff, they last for a couple topics and then they're gone.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing on that night meeting. The rest of us, you know, like Lori and I, we sit there until the very end.
You know, it's funny,
real
quick, another thing that I was able to get, you know, implemented that I talked about during the campaign was I wanted a reporting mechanism for the county, for the different county offices that they
Survey.
Could go and, yeah, so they could go and say, you know, how yeah. was their experience? And, you know, it's typical. So the staff got it implemented. The CEO, you know, took charge and they got it implemented. And now we have a county reporting, you know, survey website. And it was great reading the legitimate comments. So, I mean, we had people that were at the tax assessor's office for crying out loud. I mean, who is happy to go to the tax assessor's office to pay the taxes? But yet they were commenting, hey, they were very helpful. There was no line. They were very quick to help me. And I mean, and the auditor had some, I mean, there were some good comments. But, you know, one of the biggest knuckleheads, and you know who it was, he goes to the Board of Supervisors, and he just has to go through all the, you know, MAGA and cabal and blah, 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 on and on. It's like, dude, this is not what this is set up for. You know, we give you your 3 minutes to yell at us every meeting multiple times. Can you not ruin this good yeah. program?
Well, and people, you know, they had complained, hey, you need more meetings, you need more night meetings. And so when I was chair, we had more meetings, and we had more night meetings, and then now we have Chair Cry, more meetings than even I did, and even more night meetings. And then we've had complaint, oh, you're just eating up staff time. You have too many meetings, and why is you're holding it at night? And so there's no way to win.
You can't win.
Same thing with the budget last year. You know, we took a couple days. I mean, I looked at every line on that 1,100-page budget, every single one of them, and yet we got, you know, people people, they're complaining that we're wasting the department head's time. And it's like, this is $650 million. I'm sorry. We're going to take a look at it. Unlike past boards where you just rubber stamp it and,
yep,
hey, keep up the good work. Do whatever you're doing. We're going to take a look at it. And we got flack for that, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and so it's just there. And that's why we're just going to keep our head down, move forward, stay focused on the things that we believe are important. You know, we listen to the public, but you got to be legitimate. You know, you have to have legitimate concerns. And if you're just whiny, you know, we're really not going to listen. And you know what? I have a really good pair of headphones, so occasionally I may have to use those more often.
Yes, we hope to do that. Okay, well, I want to thank you, gentlemen, for coming in, and beautiful lady for coming in and hanging out with us and sharing the information for the public on Shasta County here. Tell us what's going on. Love to have you back to us, things progress. And I want to give honor to all the veterans who did not make it home.
Amen.
This is the time to do it, and we are grateful for them and everything that they sacrificed, because they sacrificed everything.
Freedom is not free.
Freedom is not free.
And tomorrow, 10 o'clock, I go Veterans Cemetery. That would be a good time to come out and pay our respects.
And absolutely. Thursday, 11 o'clock at the flagpole.
And
at
Anderson.
At the Veterans Grove here at the Civic Auditorium, 11 o'clock on Thursday on
and
the 30th.
10 o'clock in Anderson on Thursday also.
Okay. There you go. Plenty of places to go and pay your respects.
Yes.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.